finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I've seen the Stroud hate. What do you want Stroud doing better? 713-780-3776. People always point to the output. I get it. Like, the output production is not where it was last year. And then he also hasn't had the climb like many people expected. The people expected him to jump up to top three, top five quarterback in the NFL. And he's probably been stagnant in terms of just like actual what you see on film, and then he's been a decline in terms of stats. Like, there's no doubt about that. A member of the Hive, sophomore slump is a real thing. We need to temper expectations on Stroud a bit. I'm not there. Where do you think that Stroud should be better, Blankers?
Well, I think that if you just want to say what you see, regardless of the reasons why, I think from an accuracy standpoint, you can point to the fact that there have been throws this year where we have even pointed out he probably missed that one. He rushed that one. The timing was off on that one. And I think a lot of factors in from injuries to the rush to a lot of the different things that we were discussing. But I think if you just want to start there and say, I think that from his ability to make the throws that he made a year ago, which seemingly he made every single hard throw look easy and made every easy throw on time, that's one of the first areas that I think a lot of people are pointing to.
It's weird to me because I know that Stroud had an unbelievable rookie year and one of the best rookie years we've ever seen from a quarterback. I feel like we overlook his duds. Like, he had some duds last year, too. Whenever, the Jets game, he was already concussed, but maybe 10 for 23 prior to leaving that game. Carolina, 16 for 24. He threw 3 interceptions against the Cardinals. He had a 16 for 30 game. He had a 13 for 27
game. Take the interceptions. Take the fact that we talked over and over about it. Instead of an incomplete, there were a lot of those balls that he got away with that could have been interceptions, and if they were, it would have changed everybody's perception of that best rookie season ever kind of conversation.
Yep. Like, he was pretty fortunate last year when it comes to turnovers, for sure. Like, there was easily like 5 interceptions I can remember that were either dropped or, you know, poorly played by the defense in his rookie year. For me, it's, I don't feel like he has trust in his offensive line, and I think that he's not going through his progressions quickly, and I think he's getting a little happy-footed at times. At the same time, like, I think that he's still playing at a very high level. Like, before I watched the film on this game is whenever I saw the, you know, people saying they were out on Stroud and they were not happy with Stroud. And then watching this game, I'm like, where did you get that? Like, I thought Stroud played really well against Miami. I know his numbers weren't unbelievable, but he took care of the ball. He took a sack or two that he shouldn't have. That's going to happen in the NFL. He made three ridiculous kind of game-changing plays. The 2 touchdowns where he threw like crossbody into a tight window to find Nico Collins, and then the second touchdown to Nico was another rollout, make a defender miss, and then a good play. And then he had the one where he was almost sacked and found Tank Dell.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that he actually made some superstar plays in that game.
He absolutely did. And if, you know, if we're just pointing him out, I agree with you, because I wasn't going to list them all. We were just going to go one at a time. My big thing is the fact that everything, as I keep harping on, is directly correlated to the offensive line. But the fact is that where that can really be correlated to his play is when he doesn't feel like he's got enough time, he's not going to his fourth and fifth options in the progressions to even look at them. And even from a national perspective, the broadcasters started to pick up on it later going, oh, wow, he didn't even look right where he had either Schultz or Mixon or someone, you know, that were one of his later options, because in his head he's telling himself, I maybe can get through three of these progressions before I got to unload it or just throw it away.
Yeah, that's an area I'd like him to – I want him to stay in the pocket. Like, I remember early in the year whenever he talked about how Joe Mixon challenged him to make more plays leaving the pocket and running. And I remember hearing that. It might have been in the preseason or it was early in the year, one of the two. And I was like, I don't like that. Like, I only want him to leave the pocket when he absolutely has to. So there are times that I think he's abandoning the pocket too quickly. I think it's a combination of him wanting to be a game changer, like his words, and then secondly, not trusting the offensive line. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Rio, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up?
Hello, can you hear me, guys?
Yeah.
Hey, man, about this Trout thing, man, a couple weeks back, Granato said something, and I've been thinking about it. I want to see what you guys thought about it. He kind of compared him to, like, the RG3 type thing, and I really don't want that for Trout, but it kind of, it seems like it's going that way. I know the year's not over, still young, but same thing was said about RG3 when he had a good rookie year, and then second year was kind of a dud. What you guys thought about that?
He also had a catastrophic injury as part of that, and he got the crap beat out of him too. So it's different, because I've heard, you know, the sophomore slump definition of it would be RG3 or it would be Vince Young. But I see so much more total package ability in C.J. Stroud than either one of those two guys. And yes, RG3 was phenomenal his rookie year. He did so much dynamically with his legs and extending plays. And that inevitably is what got him crushed. I think that from a CJ perspective, the sophomore slump discussion comes from to what Jeremy mentioned that I mentioned previously, is statistically there's no argument. He's not going to have the same stats that he had a year ago. But that's why every season is its own encapsulated chapter of a book. And just so, yes, if you want to say sophomore slump, I can't argue from a statistically standpoint. But when you see his maturity, the fact that he has learned how to move the pocket even more, step up, slide right, extend plays, but also know when to throw it away a little bit more, I see maturity levels that tell me he's continuing growth to becoming the quarterback and staying as the franchise quarterback of this team, whereas other people don't want to hear that. They just want to look at stats and say, he's not the same quarterback he was a year ago, therefore he might not be your franchise quarterback.
I think using Robert Griffin to describe what Stroud is going through is one of the worst takes I've ever heard. I think it's asinine. Like,
he said Granato said that?
I don't know if he did or not. That's what the caller said.
That's what the caller said.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
And you're right. Injury played a factor into Robert Griffin's regression.
It was the entire factor, basically.
It could be argued. Like, I mean, it could be argued, I guess. And we don't really know the right answer. But, yeah, he was really good his rookie year. He was bad his sophomore year. What happened in between was that knee injury. That Robert Griffin claims the doctors, like, completely ruined him, too. Like it wasn't good enough to go. The doctors cleared him anyways. Blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, whenever I watch Stroud play football, I think that C.J. Stroud's the same guy he was last year. Mm-hmm. Is he leaving the pocket a little bit too soon? Yeah, probably, because he doesn't trust his offensive line. Is he happy-footed a bit? Yeah, it's kind of what I just said. Do I want him to stay in the pocket just a tad bit longer? Yes, I do, but I totally understand why he is not. 713-780-ESPN, Todd the Show, who's usually very, very optimistic and usually not contrarian whatsoever, /S. He says C.J. relied on plays falling apart last year and Nico finding a way to save his butt. I think a lot of last year was luck, says Todd the Show.
Oh, wow.
About one C.J. Stroud.
Todd, yeah. Well, I mean,
that's
are we
Johnny Manziel, Mike Evans argument. Come
are
on.
Are we
now.
Watching the Texans games on the phone while the Giants games are on? I mean, if you're watching any
luck.
extended time at all watching the Texans, how can you say luck when you look? And I'll go to the start of the year, the game, the way he iced the game against Indy in the first matchup, where it was third and like six or seven, and that, you know, you were trying to run some clock too, and he throws an out route that had to right on the sideline that had to be put in just a small minute window And Nico was right there. The ball was right there. Two toe taps, catches the ball, ball game. And you're like, how many quarterbacks are even trying that throw?
Yeah. Yeah, one of Stroud's better games last year, too, was against the Bengals. Nico didn't play in that game. So, and the Texans were pretty good with Nico this year, at least in win-loss record. I can't remember. But yeah, I don't think that CJ Stroud was all luck. There were some things that went his way last year, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But how much of a percentage of his rookie year was luck-based? I wouldn't put it in more than like 10%.
Yeah. You know? That might be high, but no, I'm with you 100% on that. There's nothing that says he plays and gets a lot of luck, other than the fact that a year ago he lucked out of more interceptions. But yeah. Overall, I said coming out that I had serious doubts about his ability to have touch on the football. I was extremely wrong, and I was proven wrong, and very impressed early on, just by, regardless of anything else, was criticism that were out there about C.J. Stroud, the fact that he was feathering balls over the defensive line, underneath the secondary, over the linebackers, into small windows, to where you look at it and go, there's not a lot of quarterbacks, no matter that are good quarterbacks, that can make those type throws.
Yeah, I whenever I watch Stroud, I think he's very, very close to who he was last year, and I still have confidence that he is a franchise quarterback. And I also think he makes unbelievable plays from time to time. That's on film. Like, you can see him do that.
There's no doubt. I mean, we talked about arm strength. You pointed out the fact that when everybody said, "Oh, he underthrew Tank on that ball against Jacksonville." You look at how far he threw that ball, and you're like, well, don't tell me it's because he's got a weak arm, because the ball was 65 yards plus in the air. That's a cannon.
CJ's holding on to the ball too long, seeing open receivers too late, says a texter. What if someone said, but if CJ was that guy, he could overcome offensive line and make a run. Look at Joe Burrow. I think Burrow's a better quarterback than Stroud, quite frankly. I think Burrow's really, really good.
But I also think that if you remember, you can say that, but even he couldn't overcome how bad the offensive line was that got him hurt with a significant knee injury.
I mean, he went to the Super Bowl with a bad offensive line.
He did, but he also sustained a major injury, because at a certain point, no matter how much your ability, you're going to take excessive hits.
But I think that's two different conversations, right? Like, if you're comparing Burrow versus Stroud, that's one conversation. And the second conversation is the importance of protecting your quarterback so he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, and I also think that we're also setting this curve up, or people put, not us specifically, but there's a curve that's being set up that he should already be advanced enough to do the things. We've seen this throughout sports. Some people progress quicker than others. Burrow seemed to grasp it right away, get every element of it, and take it to another level in terms of being able to move the pocket and do the things that CJ has struggled a little bit more with in year two. That's not to say he's not going to continue to get better and grasp it all and be better at it, but Burrow got it right away and was able to react and adjust right away quicker than CJ's done in year two.
Keith from L.A., everyone wants CJ to play more like Allen and Lamar, be more mobile, more of a playmaker. See, I'm the opposite. I don't want to play like Burrow.
Yeah. I think Burrow's the perfect example, because Burrow, even this year, has played behind a poor offensive line. And watching him play, it feels like a master class of being able to buy time while staying in the pocket and staying open for the big throw. The way he's able to dip a shoulder, just take a couple shuffle steps and maneuver in the pocket and then stay open for the throw, where CJ has a tendency to sometimes bail out and, even worse at times, overlook the guys like Dalton Schultz wide open in the flat on key downs a couple of games ago. I think that's the gap that he needs to make up between himself and Burrow.
The thing is that we've seen the quarterback that tried to extend plays and use his legs and be more like those guys, and it didn't go well. And regardless of the off-the-field stuff, when Deshaun was the quarterback, he constantly was trying to extend plays and do too much with his legs, and it just caused more trouble than it did get them good. And from a CJ perspective, he came out and they said he can't run. Well, there's a difference between can't and realizes that it's not the best thing to do in a lot of cases. And he's playing his game with his style of play, with his skill set, the best way that it is right for him. I don't want him to try and emulate those guys. You're right, Burrow would be a guy that you would like him to continue to be like and be close to. It's just that Burrow has a certain skill set and a certain ability that CJ may never get to.
I also think we're kind of underselling that Stroud has made those type of plays. Like, you look at the Dolphin game. Like, we pointed to him just a moment ago. Like, he has that ability. It's more about when to do it and when to stay in the pocket and I think it's a very, very fine line. I would like to see Jay hit guys in stride more. Okay, I thought he hit I thought he hit John Metchie in stride and dropped the ball. That should have been a touchdown. Yes, it would have been a good catch, but I thought it was a good throw that should have walked into the end zone. Metchie didn't make a catch. I just want the easy passes completed. I feel like he does a good job of that. Now
yeah.
Stroud or Deshaun Watson did not.
No,
I feel like Stroud does a pretty good job.
That's what I was saying to the point that you reiterated is the fact that the knock was he can't run. He can. I don't think that he wants to, and I don't think I want him to, because of the fact that he's so good being a pocket passing quarterback, doing the things that really capitalize on his skill set.
And he's not built like Josh Allen to withstand the hits either.
No, yeah,
true. And even if he had lightning quickness, yeah, there's something to be said about the fact that all it takes is one hit, and suddenly your franchise quarterback could ruin the entire season. And that's why, whether he can or not, and because of the fact that, like you said, and he doesn't have the physical skill set that Josh Allen does, yeah, I don't. That's why I said I don't want him running.
Look, the Texans and Slowick called the game completely different last year, and now they get Mixon, and he completely changed his game script up, and I think it hurts Stroud big time. I think it's more about the offensive line than mm-hmm. Mixon. Tyler and Conroe, Stroud's biggest issue is the O-line is no good. Second biggest is that wide receiver outside of Nico aren't very good. I disagree there. Diggs is still second in receptions on this team. I think it's more about getting the ball out and protecting Stroud to allow him to go through his progressions.
Plus your safety valve is almost always your the wheel route or your back out of the backfield or your tight end when you're under duress. And to his credit, he has gotten the ball out to get a positive play out of being under duress a lot with Joe Mixon.
Burrow isn't handcuffed to Slowick's trash play calling and constantly being in third and seven. Masterclass by Burrow. He's having MVP season on a bad team. And then we become too obsessed with stats. Yeah, I think we have. Mm-hmm. I do. I think in a fantasy football era,
yep.
And prop bets and MVP stuff, yeah, I think we have become too obsessed with stats. I don't like stats in football. I think that stats are overrated in football. Blake Bortles was a top five passer in the NFL one year. Huh. What does that mean?
Who would have known that?
Yeah, I think that stats are a bit overrated in the NFL. Like, having a great passing yardage year doesn't always mean you're a good quarterback. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I'm going to address the Kyle Tucker trade, what I thought of it. Also, the post-Tucker aftermath. And then also, within the last few minutes, there has been a report from Sports Illustrated that Nolan Arenado has blocked a trade to the Houston Astros. What does that tell us? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So, Nolan Arenado blocks a potential trade to the Astros, according to Brian McTaggart and John Denton. Also, Mark Feinsand has piggybacked that report, as has Schwab, 30 minutes later. So, Nolan, it doesn't say that the Astros completed a trade with the Cardinals. It says that they were talking about a trade, mm-hmm. and then Arenado is like, nah, not going to Houston. So what does that tell you on whatever you're thinking about when you hear that, Blinkers?
I think that they need to adjust and shift gears. I think that I mentioned the other day that Chandler Rome came out and said that everything was progressing well down the road with the two teams. It started at the winter meetings. It's progressed to the point where they discussed like terms, financials, possible players, but that it was still waiting on and had to be approved by Arenado. Well, now you've got your final answer, and now it's time to understand from a Bregman perspective. It sounds like if I'm Bregman, I'm like, well, yeah, they don't want me back, and they're looking for my replacement, and they've been doing things, so I need to do things too, to where you might have already kind of decided before Bregman decided on what you're going to do at third base. So now it's like, what's plan B?
Yeah.
Or C, if Paredes is plan B.
Yeah. Look, I think that there's always a possibility, like a plausibility, that the media is getting played. Like, what if this was a huge Dana Brown stunt to try to force Bregman's hand? Like, it's, hey, we're interested in Arenado. Hey, we're interested in this guy. We're interested in that guy. To force to force Alex Bregman and Scott Boras into a decision. Because, look, Bregman hasn't signed anywhere.
Yeah.
Bregman can go anywhere. Like, I'm just throwing that out there as a plausibility.
No.
Not saying that I believe it. Let's just always consider that general managers do play the media game. Hey, McTaggart, like, hey, tweet out that that Arenado blocked this. Probably not the blocking. It'd probably be more the Astros are interested in Arenado. The blocking actually lets you know that there probably was some smoke.
For sure. But to your point, Jeremy, I had a conversation with a buddy of mine this morning on that, saying, look, Scott Boras' job is to get the biggest amount of years and money that he can possibly get for his client. At a certain point, like we've seen with Altuve and others previous, you're going to find a point where the player just decides, I don't care about the most money. I care about playing where I want to play. This kind of, you're right, to your point, it could force the hand of Bregman a little bit more to say, well, they've got one option already in-house in Paredes. If they were attacking Arenado, that's basically letting me know I got to put up or shut up in terms of the Astros at a certain point, or just decide that or the realization is I got to take the best offer that's not Houston.
Yeah, if the reports were true, like, and there was, like, I'm not saying the reports aren't true. I'm just saying if the reports were actually, like, legitimate in the sense that the Astros were actually doing it as opposed to leaking information to try to play this calculated, deceiving game. Mm-hmm. But if we were to believe what has been reported, that the Astros were trying to trade for Arenado and then Arenado has blocked a trade, I do think it's a really good sign that the Astros are done with Bregman, if these reports are true. I think it's probably where Scott Boras' asking price is more than the Astros are willing to pay. So that would be the first thing. There, as far as Arenado as an Astro, that contract, now we don't know how much the Cardinals were going to be paying in this. Like, if you were getting Arenado at 75% of his contract being paid, I think it's a much different story than Arenado at his full contract. So the details matter here. Now we're never going to have the details because Arenado blocked the trade. But if you're getting Arenado for a 75% discount and you weren't giving anything of significance, then I think Arenado made some sense. Now if you're paying the full contract, it makes no sense whatsoever. So I'm kind of torn on what to think of Arenado as an Astro. I could get behind Arenado as an Astro if the Astros were paying very little of that contract and gave up nothing in return. So
yeah, I was
thinking we're never going to know.
50% would have been great. But if you went further than that, that would be awesome. But if you weren't getting at least that back, I'm out.
And, like, do I think Arenado is not the player he used to be? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think he's washed? Washed is a strong word. But would I rather see Arenado in the lineup or John Singleton in the lineup? I'd probably rather see Arenado in the lineup. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there were some ways where Arenado to the Astros made sense. It would have to be the Cardinals paying a lot of his contract, and it would have to be me giving nothing in return. But now that ship has sailed. So, like, what do they do? Like, we'll have to see. Now, the beauty of having Paredes is that he can play either corner outfield spot or corner infield spot, I should say. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have some flexibility on what you could go after.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why I said you've got, you know, bird in the hand is you've got Paredes that can play third if Bregman walks. If he comes back and or you have another option at third or you want to explore other options at third, he absolutely can play first. And that was exactly how they targeted him for his versatility at the trade deadline a year ago. So I think that you at least have that already in-house no matter what you do next. The Arenado thing to me was, and part of that sidebar to me was also, even – you know, with the Cardinals trying to get out of it, it's the overall finances of it and also the fact that the diminishing returns seem like he's on a crash course for it to get worse before anybody could say it could get better.
Yeah.
To where I think you should have learned a lesson with Abreu and Montero and the deals that you did with older players and or, you know, guys in that kind of situation previously to go, I'm out on that.
A few of the texters have read the article that on the report that we haven't had the luxury to do that
right.
yet. They said that the offer from what the Cardinals were going to send financially would have put the Astros on the hook for 3 years, $45 million. So what is that? That's about $15 million a year?
Yeah, it's exactly 15 a year. That's
too
for 45,
much. I think that's too much. For
15 Arenado. For a third baseman?
For Arenado? Yeah, Arenado's about an average third baseman right now, and he's declining. So, I mean, you might get one more average season out of Arenado, and then you're looking at two below-average seasons at best. I think Nolan Arenado did you a huge favor.
Yeah, I tend to believe you're right too. It's just I think defensively he's a notch above, still a notch above Alex Bregman. I think offensively, which is cringeworthy to me, what I heard a lot of people start talking about is, well, he's going to take advantage of the Crawford boxes. Isn't that exactly what you heard about with Abreu? Isn't that exactly what you were told was going to happen with Abreu that didn't happen with a guy that's in his mid-30s? I just that's the scary part. Offensively, I'm not sure that he's going to get any better than even what he did a year ago.
Yeah, that's too much for me. Like, to me, it would have made sense if you could get it. And I agree with you about his defense. I still think that he can absolutely pick it at third base. His bat is what concerns me. And that's too much for 3 years. Like, I don't want that. Like, 15's not crazy, but 15 at 3 years? Like, I could, and obviously you can't change the duration of his contract because those are the terms of his contract. But I would have wanted more money for Arenado to make. I'd rather go Polanco for a year. Christian Walker would be interesting to me. Like, heck, just doing a platoon at first base would make some sense with Singleton and with, like, Ty France or a right-handed bat. So, like, yeah, I'm happy that Arenado blocked this.
I'm not as intrigued with Polanco as you are. I am intrigued with Ty France because he kind of found it a little bit better when he was with Cincinnati. But overall, if you get Christian Walker out of this deal and he plays first and Polanco plays – I mean, not Polanco – and Paredes plays third – yeah. I think you're fine.
The thing that I don't want to use the word concern. The thing that would annoy me signing Christian Walker is it would feel like the Astros are kind of not sure what they're doing. Like my whole thing with the Kyle Tucker trade is like, cool, make the Kyle Tucker trade. I'm all for that. You know what my philosophy is? I believe in trading players before they leave you for free and keeping that wheel of motion going forever and forever. Now, I don't think it's – I also like to look at an offseason in its totality. Like, I don't like looking at just one trade and, defining the offseason. I need to see the offseason as a whole. So if you're trading Tucker for, like, you know, because you want to get something before he leaves and you're getting a really good young prospect and guys that can help you immediately, I understand that. But then if you sign Christian Walker and then you lose a draft pick because he has compensation attached to his name, doesn't that feel like you're kind of contradicting yourself? It feels like you're rudderless. It doesn't feel like you have a plan.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from. Because then the other thing, the way I was looking at it is, would you rather have Christian Walker or Teoscar Hernandez? Because if Christian Walker means that you are done in the free agency market looking at kind of the higher tier, better ability players that might be able to help you, I would rather have a platoon of three guys for two spots with Yiner and Caratini and Big John, and get an outfielder of a Teoscar Hernandez type, than I would to say that Chaz and Jake are going to be in the outfield almost all the time for me, and that you're going to have Walker at first and Paredes at third. I would rather take the three guys platooning the two positions and get a better bat in the outfield.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. And now you're not losing the draft pick because Teoscar doesn't have compensation.
Yep.
So it's like that to me makes sense. Like, you don't trade Tucker for a high-level prospect and then sign a guy that's going to cost you a draft pick.
Right.
That's a contradiction in terms of, like, we want the minor league system to be better. So I don't – that's why, to me, I'm waiting to grade this offseason in its totality. Trading Tucker, I'm cool with. But then I need to see secondary moves, too.
Yep.
Like, the idea that Chaz McCormick's going to be your right fielder, like, who's playing left? Like, that to me is gross. Like, that would be a failure of an offseason. And Chaz McCormick in right field is going to cost you multiple runs a game, by the way, because he's got a noodle for an arm. You can get away with bad arms in center and in left field. You cannot get away with a poor arm in right field. The opposition is going to go first to third all day long. Chaz McCormick cannot play right field for you.
No, if those two guys are platooning center field and Chaz is starting in center with Jake behind him, I'm fine. If those two guys are both starting in your outfield more times than not, I am extremely bothered.
Yeah, so like that to me is where I like the trade, but I need to see the entire offseason to see what Dana Brown does before I'm defining what the Astros did in this offseason. A few texts on this, 713-780-ESPN. What does this Arenado declining the Astros mean? The texter says it means Arenado's a soft bad word that doesn't like to win. Okay. I would like to thank Arenado for blocking Abreu 2.0. Yeah, I think it's fair. Can a team require
Bregman on the back of his baseball card.
Can a team require Bregman to do a physical in order to test his throwing arm before offering him a contract? I don't think that you can do a physical before offering him a contract. I think you can only do the physical once he is signed or has agreed to terms. I don't think that you can do it before you offer him.
I think – well, you can definitely look at the medicals. I think
sure.
When discussing your trade, you can look at the medicals.
Well,
I
for Bregman, Bregman specifically, it's free agency.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, let's look at Correa, though. Like, he had agreements with two different
and
teams.
Then it got
I think you can agree to the deal, but
that's
the deal is able to be canceled if,
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's pending. Like, you come to an agreement on terms pending the physical. But before you offer a contract, I don't think that the players, I don't think he can, actually.
I don't think you can. I mean, obviously, the Giants and Mets backed out of deals with Crea. Clearly, they didn't look at him before they made the offer.
So was that where they signed it with a voidable in it if he doesn't pass
the physical?
No, I think that's standard.
I think that's standard.
I think with the CBA that all contracts signed with free agencies are pending physical.
Okay.
I'll trade you that way too. Like, I think any time that a player is being acquired by a team, that it's pending.
Because it doesn't make sense if you're the agent or the player to say that you're going to agree to the physical before the deal is signed.
Yeah, there's no way that Alex Bregman's going to be like, hey, Boston wants you, but they want to see you throw first. There's no way Scott Boras is saying, okay, let's do that. Yeah, and plus, I actually think it's against the rules in the CBA with the collective bargaining agreement between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. I think Arenado's doing a favor. I want to see the entire offseason. I like the trade. I wonder if they fell out of favor with Kyle Tucker too. Like, I'm just kind of curious. Like the whole 3 months with the broken shin. Like, I wonder if there was more at play here.
I don't know, man. What we would love to be a fly on the wall that could get all the info that we will maybe never get the answer to. In that debacle and so much more as it relates to injuries and the Astros and how everything was handled behind the scenes. But that is curious. You're right.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blessing or stressing? Are we blessing or are we stressing? It's next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. In the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
All right, are we blessing or are we stressing? With our good friend Garrett, blessing or stressing, HoustonStressins.com on IG at HoustonStressins, Texans commenter on TikTok and Twitter. Producers are yelling at me first, though, that I have to do this liner. ESPN 97.5 is your home for every single college football playoff game. Thanks to ESPN Radio, pregame for Notre Dame and Indiana starts at 6:30 on Friday. And then Saturday, the broadcast begins right at 11 a.m. as we hear the next three games, including Texas versus Clemson. It's going to be weird, all this college football playoff stuff. It's awesome. Weird, different, but awesome. All right, Garrett, how are you? Hope things are well. Blessing that you're with us. What are we blessing or stressing today?
Oh, doing good, Jeremy. I've missed you, man.
That's nice of you to say. I didn't get that from Blankers or Brian. They just kinda, I was like, hey, guys, thanks for holding down the fort. I missed you guys, and I got crickets.
Yeah, I heard you had a hang-up on your flight. I'm just going to take a guess and that you flew United.
Southwest.
Okay. Well, anyways.
Bags fly free.
Yeah, but not your flight all the time. That's
not
for sure.
Me.
All right, yeah, first up, I'll be blessing or stressing the new offensive line and how they project going forward. I'll start off. I'm big blessing this. I mean, y'all know we talked about this all season, but this exact scenario of this lineup was something that I've been kind of hoping for a while. Honestly, since the Jets game when Kenyon Green went down, which was moving Titus Howard from right tackle to left guard and then Blake Fisher in at right tackle. We talked about how, yes, it was a little bit of a risk, you know, sacrificing play at right tackle because Titus was playing at a pretty high level. And then, you know, kind of the unknown of a rookie in Blake Fisher. Limited sample size. We're not really sure how he's going to play. And then, you know, Titus last year, he played a good amount at left guard and the play wasn't the best. But to me, it was about putting the best five out there. And I think that was their philosophy as well. And then I think something we didn't really realize too was there was chemistry last year between LT and Titus Howard and then Titus Howard and Jarrett Patterson at center. So I think there's something to say about that. All things considered, it sounds like he didn't really practice much that week, but it seems like Titus did a great job, and it seems like Blake Fisher did a great job.
Yeah, I was stressing it before the move was made, and I will be mildly blessing it now simply because I still think it's a work in progress. I've got to see Fisher when you play the caliber of pass rush that you're going to see with Kansas City, when you move on from that and see what Baltimore does to him, because he's still a rookie, and there's still a reason why, you know, he was a year away in a lot of people's minds. But if it means that you solidify the left side as good as you can, and I've heard D'Amico say this, and I just heard you say it, Garrett, and I understand it. At this point in the season, you just got to put your best five out there and hope for the best because you can't have the gaping holes or lack thereof in the run game that you've been seeing with the guys the way they've currently set it up. I hate the musical chairs aspect of any offensive line taking guys out of their natural position, but I think that at least for 1 week, coming out of this, I kind of was able to breathe a sigh of relief and go, okay, maybe there's hope for this.
Yeah, I'm going to bless it too. I don't think that – I thought that – I was more impressed with Fisher at right tackle than I was Titus at left guard. I thought Fisher held up nicely. Now, I do agree with Blankers that, like, let's continue to see this. Let's see it with a better pass rush, especially against Kansas City. So, totally agree on that. I also think it's a precursor of the offseason a little bit. I wouldn't shock me if the Texans move on from Titus Howard during the offseason. You can save a lot of money if you designate him as a post-June 1st cut. I've held this belief since they drafted Blake Fisher. Like, the moment they drafted Blake Fisher, I was saying that 2024 is going to be Titus Howard's final year as a Houston Texan. And the way the season is gone, I feel stronger about that take today than I did then. Like, you don't draft a tackle in the second round to have him sit multiple years. Maybe the first year. Like, I get that. Maybe the first year. But you're not going to draft a guy in the second round and then have him sit for multiple years, especially if he's doing well, like behind the scenes and in practice and things like that. And then now that he played in a game from start to finish, held up nicely, and yes, we need to continue to see that going forward, I feel like Titus Howard's going to be gone during the offseason. But as far as this season, I am blessing it.
That would be tough, too, because he did a selfless act by moving out of position. We all know that he...
Yeah, I'm sick of that, Garrett. Sorry.
Texas did a selfless act by making him a top 10 paid right tackle.
I'm fed up with that whole argument. Like, hey, what a selfless... Dude, you're being paid by the team to do what is in the best interest of the team. Like, it's nauseating. It's nauseating to me. But, oh my goodness, Titus Howard is so selfless. What did he do? Like, he didn't save anybody's life. Like, he didn't help a dude who was pulled over on the street that needed a flat tire fixed, and they had a screaming baby in the back seat. He shifted over three spots on the offensive line and got paid handsomely to do it. So the whole, oh, what a selfless act. Are you kidding me? That's not selfless. It's being a professional.
Yeah, and then, I mean, he really has no choice, too. Like, I guess, would we know if he was asked and said no anyways? I mean, I don't know how that would pan out, but...
Just look at his Twitter.
I would have sent him home. Yeah. Is it still there? I'm curious if it's still there.
No, but he had an interview in the locker room today where he did mention, like, I'm a tackle, but he said he played...
Are you serious?
But it wasn't, like, in that kind of vein, but, like, I caught that. Like, I think he meant to, like, say it to, like, say, like, hey, that's maybe why I'm not playing as good at guard, if that's the case. But, you know, this was a move made out by necessity because Kenyon Green was out and Scruggs was out. So I did watch D'Amico Ryan's interview, and I am somewhat concerned because he said it was about playing – it's about playing our best five for that week. And now Kenyon Green is back.
Oh.
I am terrified that decide to bring Kenyon Green back. I hope he doesn't. Let's just ignore that thought and hopefully
DJ Bienemé was a guy pushing that envelope too, going, hey, look, as a run blocker, he's one of the best run blockers you got, and that's why the run game was. That's why he, you know, could be out there. I don't want to see Kenyon Green unless there's injuries.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page on that. So next up I got, are we blessing or stressing D'Amico Ryan's approach with the rest of the season? To me, it's apparent on the rest versus rust that he is more so on not being rusty. He seems that he wants to play his guys. This is just me kind of speculating from listening to him talk about it. He kind of has that mindset of anytime there's a football game being played, it's opportunity to get better. You know, we clinched the division. We're pretty much locked into the 4 seed, could move to the 3 seed, very unlikely to be the 2nd seed, but still a chance. So going forward, are you blessing or stressing, you know, that we're not going to rest guys if that's the case? I'm mildly blessing it. It's a delicate balance. It's tough to, you know, really, especially this far out. We got 3 games left. Maybe the last game of the year I would be voting for it, especially if we're locked in. But at this point in time, these next 2 games, playing opponents that are, you know, powerhouses for a chance for us to prove that we are contenders and not pretenders, I want to see those guys go out there and get better and, you know, kind of show everyone what we're made of. So I'm mildly blessing it.
I think from my perspective, we just talked about it from an offensive line perspective. I've been blessing the fact that I want to see them at this point with 3 games left. I want them to continue to get reps for all these guys. I want the line, if this is the line that they're going to be hell-bent on putting out there, I want them to work together against better than average pass rush or better defenses to continue to get continuity. Where I am at with is when the playoffs picture is pretty clear. When there's a clear cut, you're not going to move any higher or any lower, then I might be able to be more open to and understand and actually encourage sit some guys, rest some guys. You don't want key guys getting dinged up. But at this point where they sit right now, I'm blessing the fact that I want them to still be getting their reps and being out there.
Yeah, I'm on Blanker's side of this too. I'm blessing. I also think that D'Amico's bluffing a little bit. Like I do think maybe not against Kansas City, but you get to Baltimore, which is the final leg of three games in 11 days. You're going to tell me that Danielle Hunter, you're going to tell me that Will Anderson, you're going to tell me that those guys are playing 75% of the snaps, or are they playing closer to 55? I think that they're going to be selective in resting their players. They aren't going to come out and say, and I think D'Amico's mindset is an appropriate one too, like, hey, we're a team that's physical and we want to win, and you know, every time we lace them up, we're going to go out there and give it our best effort. Like, I think it's important. An important message to send.
Well, when you think about it too, Jeremy, throw Mixon into that just because of we saw what they weren't whenever he's been hurt, to where you can't afford to have him less than as close to 100% as you can get him, just like Will Anderson's ankle.
At the same time, you have to be –
Derek Stingley, soft tissue issues.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have to be clicking on all cylinders, right?
Sure, right.
Like, the goal is to win it all, right? Like, we might not think that they're capable of doing that, and, you know, everybody's going to have a different argument in their chances of winning it all. But I don't think they can win it all with the offense that they're currently playing. I think it's important for their next three games where they're trying to click on all cylinders. Like, they're trying to get as close as they can to being right offensively. Now, if you want to rest some guys some series defensively, I'm all for that. If you don't want to play Stingley in the second half of the Tennessee game, or if you don't want to play him at all, like, I get that. I think it's more important on the offensive side, though, to try to get right.
Well, another factor, too, is the fact that, like, currently as it stands, we would play Baltimore at home. If we won that game in the playoffs in the first round, we would play at Kansas City. So we're potentially playing two opponents in the next 2 weeks that we could see again in the playoffs. So how much of that is do you want to show your full hand? So it could be kind of that same notion could be discussed about game plan and whatnot, which was the situation last year with the Browns. We played them late in the year.
Yeah.
Seemed like we didn't put our best effort forward, but then we got the best of them in the playoffs, and it worked out in the end. So that's another wrinkle to think about.
Yeah, I think that as it relates to the plays that you're calling, what's on film is on film. So if you've run the play previously, you can run that play again. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be putting any new wrinkles, and I wouldn't be trying to implement anything now that I might use later that I give to a team prior to playing them in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. One example of that was against the Browns. Amari Cooper went for, like, what, 200-something yards? And all of us said, hey, Stingley should shadow, and he didn't. And D'Amico said, we don't do that. Come playoffs, all of a sudden, boom, Stingley shadows him and shuts him down. So maybe that's part of it too. But, yeah, another one I got is, are we blessing or stressing? Let's just hypothetically say that Patrick Mahomes will play. Are you stressing if Patrick Mahomes plays? I am big blessing if he plays. I want him to play. I want to beat the best. I don't know if y'all have seen the Chris Farley skit. I want Holyfield. I want the champ. Because I just know on the flip side, if he doesn't play, which I don't think he should if I'm the Chiefs, in my opinion, given how bad their tackle situation is going against probably the best edge duo in the league with the Mahomes on a bum ankle. But anyways, I'm a Texans fan. I know if he doesn't play, I already know the narrative. If you win, no big deal. It's going to get discredited. And then if you lose, you're the worst team ever. You know, so I want our chance to see where we stack up against the best.
See, this is to me conversations from both sides of the field. From a Chiefs perspective, there's one discussion. From a Texans perspective, I would be stressing any time I was playing Patrick Mahomes because he's that good. And because we've seen with lesser than weapons around him, he's still capable of doing a whole lot of very special things to win football games. So you have to be stressing if he's going to play, regardless, simply because of the fact his ability is on a different level, which is why we put him at a different tier than any other quarterback in this league. From the standpoint of the Texans, I don't care whether he plays or not. It's more about me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be, like, to Jeremy's point that I've been harping on a lot lately too, is they've been consistently inconsistent all year on both sides of the ball. I need to start getting that cleaned up. I need to start showing progress heading into the playoffs that we're getting better regardless of who we're playing. And so that's where I'm at with all of it. Like, whether he plays or not, it's more about me than it is about him and them.
Yeah, I'm calling BS on this high ankle sprain, by the way. On Pat Mahomes. I think he's being a drama queen a little bit. You're telling me that he's
a full participant yesterday.
Full participant on a walkthrough yesterday. High ankle sprain in like 2 days after the injury.
But he was a participant today too, as well, I believe.
Yeah, I'm calling some BS on this high ankle sprain. Is what I don't think it was a high. I think that he got a little bit of boo boo, and Pat Mahomes, you know, poor little Pat Mahomes got a boo boo, high ankle sprain. Try to make him look tough. I don't think it was as nearly as impactful as they made it out to believe. But I'm blessing if he plays. look, we all want the Texans to, like, go to the Super Bowl, right? We think that they would have to cross the paths with the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs should they, you know, ultimately get there, right? Like, we all think that the Kansas City Chiefs would be on the Texans' path if they got to the Super Bowl.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Not saying it's going to happen, just saying that would be the path that you have to take. Would it be easier to beat the Chiefs with or without Pat Mahomes?
Yeah. Fact. Easier to be without him.
Yeah. Then attack him this week. Attack him. Give him a real high ankle sprain. Break that ankle. Break that bad boy. Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, get after Pat. I don't even care if you win the game at Arrowhead Stadium this Saturday whenever you go to Kansas City. That shouldn't be goal number one. Goal number one should be that you make sure you don't see Pat Mahomes in the postseason. Show him what a high ankle sprain really feels like, Danielle Hunter. Show
Just
him
throw
what
the
a high ankle sprain
there.
Feels like, Will Anderson. Make him feel your presence. Make him feel you, physical style of play. Hey, you want to get to a Super Bowl, you want to get there. It's something that the Texans have never done. You know Kansas City is going to be in your way. I'm just saying. He wants to fake a high ankle sprain. Go give him a real one. Go give him a real one. If he gets hurt, oh, well.
What else you got, Garrett?
What else? Well.
I wish Jeremy was in person for that part of the segment.
Be physical. Every single coach in the NFL says they want their defense to be physical.
Well,
like,
that's my logic of why, if I'm the Chiefs, he should not play. Even if he's hurt or not,
I agree with you.
I would.
Well, like I said, it's two separate discussions.
If the ankle was legit, it is two separate discussions. You're absolutely right. If it was legitimate, which I question highly, but if it was a legitimate high ankle sprain, I'm totally with you. He should not play against two of the best pass rushers in the NFL, maybe the best pass rushing duo in the NFL, one of the better defensive lines in the NFL. If it was a legit high ankle sprain, he has no business playing in that game. I just don't think it's legit. I think he's closer to 100% than he is 70%. So I think that you have to play him in that sense. But hey, yeah, make him feel you. Make him feel you. And even like I'm obviously a little bit tongue in cheek whenever I'm talking about injuring him. Now I do want to get after him. And if he plays the Texans again, I want him to remember how much you got after him on Saturday. So yeah, like send a statement. Make a presence made this Saturday.
And at least let him know too, like, you know, you want him to play to see how good that D-line is, so when you play him next, if he is healthy, that he kind of has that in the back of his mind.
Oh, for sure. Like, every single coach in the NFL says they want their defense to be physical. Like, I'm saying the quiet part out loud, quite frankly. All right, Gary, appreciate it. Blessing or Stressins, you can find him at HoustonStressins.com, on IG at HoustonStressins, Texans commenter on TikTok and Twitter. So today's my first show back in a while, and we're trying to ease me back into a full show. So I'm gonna dip out here. When the boys come back, is it time to trade Fromber to? Boys, take you the rest of the way. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.